Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
What is going on, everybody? Thursday, March 17th, the first day of the round of 64. For 2022 March Madness. We are not here to talk about college basketball as much as it is in Talking Town right now. We are here to talk about the NBA. This is the FTN NBA Podcast. I am your host, Joe Metz, joined as always by my good friends, Adam Pfeiffer and Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawhisenberg. We have one lonesome game on today's slate, a riveting matchup between the Pistons and the Magic. So we figured, what better way to avoid talking about that game than to hop on for an afternoon edition of the FTN NBA Podcast, running through a host of topics, whether it be the underdog semifinal round, who the best player in the league is and how you measure it, the latest outburst from Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Karl Anthony Towns, Steph Curry's injury. There's a lot going on in the NBA right now, so we're going to dive into it. But before we do, Zach, I'll kick it to you first. How you doing? Grind of the season right now. We're almost home.
I'm doing great, man. Maybe it's kind of just the surrounding factors, not just the NBA. Like, obviously, last night for my own personal fandom, the Spurs, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, which is obviously what I want. Lonnie Walker can't get off this team fast enough because that guy's just a try-hard, man. Like... favored by 13 at home, end up down one to the Thunder with seconds left, and he has to go and hit a shot. Dude, I'm looking at this schedule. We play Portland three times in the next 11 days. We play New Orleans twice, which those two, the New Orleans games are going to be huge.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm getting really, really nervous because you look at the Lakers' schedule. Their schedule is tough. And I just really don't want, after this months of just being happy that we're losing games, if they sneak into the fucking play-in, I'm going to be devastated. They'll still get into the lottery, but again, this is all about getting more ping pong balls for me. I want more shots at the top three because I think there's three potentially franchise-molding players in this draft. And it's just, I don't know, man, I'm getting nervous. But March Madness, best time of the year. Austin FC comes back home this weekend. St. Patrick's Day today. South by Southwest is going on in Central Texas.
Right.
It's a good time to be Kawhisenberg, man.
What about Adam? What about you? I mean, it's got to be a good time to be Adam Pfeiffer right now after yesterday.
Yeah, like I don't know where I am right now. I haven't been on the pod in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then yeah, like. Zach is the one that pointed out, he just put Von Miller in all caps. It's like, oh, okay. And then, of course, everybody freaks out about the initial contract. And then, of course, it settles down. It looks like a fine deal. But no, it's like, honestly, like, we'll talk about basketball in a second. But it's super exciting because, like, I tweeted it. But back in 2011, like, there's always, you know, the handful of players that come out of the draft that you, like, pray your team gets. Like, that's the player you love. That was Von Miller for me. The Bills picked third. Von Miller went second, so I was crushed. Still got a good player in Marcell Dareus, but now we have Von Miller, and we finally have it. The Bills haven't had a double-digit sack player in, like, 6 years, so hopefully Von Miller ends that streak. And then, yeah, basketball is crazy right now. The Cavs are tied. They have the tiebreaker right now over Toronto for the sixth seed, so that's going to be fun down the stretch. You have players scoring 55, 60 real points almost every night now, and, of course, now we have the unfortunate Steph Curry injury, which can shake up how things look in the Western Conference playoff standings. So, yeah, a lot to talk about. And, of course, like Zach said, we got March Madness on too, which just adds to the, you know, the great time of year for sports. So I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I agree. The weather's starting to come around up here in Milwaukee as well. Things are looking up. Bucks are playing well with Brooke Lopez back, so none of us are complaining right now. So, like I said, lots going on in the NBA. The quickest update we have is the underdog update. We are in round three of four. The semifinal round goes until Sunday, March 20th. And then from there, there is a 2 week, 13, 14 day final, which I believe, Zach, you may have to correct me on this. 53 or 58 person.
I think it's contest. 58 people in the final.
58 people in the finals, 50K up top to first. I think the lowest payout is a couple hundred or something like that. It's mm-hmm. it's a very generous pool with the amount of overlay. Myself, I was able to get seven of my 150 into the semifinals. I have four that have legs right now, two in second, one in third, one in fourth, all within 50 points of first. If I can get one in, that's obviously the goal. If I can get more than one, I feel very good about my chances at winning. My team's led by Scotty Barnes, Kyle Kuzma, and Nikola Jokic. I think Kuzma might be one of the values of the draft at this point. I think Kristaps coming back hurts him a bit. I just need Cade Cunningham to play tonight. I'm 40 back of first in one of them with Cade Cunningham. So him, you know, it only being a one-game slate tonight, that would be a massive difference maker if I can get him active. Since Jeremy Grant has already been ruled out, a player I have a lot of. Zach, do you have any legs in the underdog semifinals as we speak?
Yeah, so I think we discussed how I was well behind you and Stefano once we got to the second round of the tournament in terms of the sheer number of teams. But I ended up getting four through to the semifinals.
Okay.
Which I thought was, I think I had 23 in the second round.
You got to think that's 22-ish%. That's a really big win. I mean, they were
18 team leagues in the second round, right? So like winning four of those was nice. I did not have a good start at all to the semifinals with these four teams, but one of the four, I've got one in ninth, two in 11th. Again, 18 team leagues here. I've got one that snuck up to second. Oof. And has it was a larger gap 2 days ago. I was about 65 points off of the first place team there. Now it's down to 20. And Joe, I'm sorry, but the guy I'm trying to catch has Cade Cunningham. So I'm going to need him to sit out tonight. Because, and like that was part of our.
Oh, well, the guy I'm trying to catch also has Cade. God damn it.
Yeah. Our strategy preseason was drafting Rockets and Pistons. Because they, in the semifinals and the final round, they have the most games out of any team. So we had a lot of those teams, but on this team, this is a Houston only team for me, and it's only Jalen Green, Trey Young, DeJounte, Cole Anthony. I would have going tonight. Dylan Brooks is back. Trey Murphy, kind of the dud on this team. Isaiah Roby now a dud as he's kind of worked his way out of that rotation. Jaylen Brown, Pascal Siakam, Kyle Kuzma, Precious Achiuwa getting it done for me at the wing right now, and then Embiid anchoring the team in the middle. So I am officially 18.6 points behind first place there. So that's my lone shot here with really three slates plus tonight's showdown game to go.
Yeah, and a lot can happen in three slates. You know, we've seen it all throughout the underdog season.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back at some point, whether we make it or not, to recap the underdog season. And I, even if hypothetically say we don't make the finals, I think all three of us did very well this season with at least 20-ish, 20-25% of our lineups within reach of the semifinals. I think it's a very big win. That Karl Anthony Towns, like one of the teams I disliked the most on draft, like when we were drafting, was my Karl Anthony Towns one. Because his ADP was like sixth overall, sixth or seventh at some point. And he hadn't really been living up to much of it. But when the time came and it was most important, he scored 60 points on 31 shots. So that segues us really well into kind of some of these ceiling performances over this last week. It's got to be the first time in NBA history, back-to-back slates, we had a player score 60 points on 31 shots. Karl Anthony Towns on, was it Monday or Tuesday? Monday, Kyrie Irving doing it on Tuesday. So, Adam, I'll kick it to you. I guess I a loaded question. Which of these two was more impressive to you?
I feel like most of the time when it's between Kyrie Irving scoring a lot of points and any other player, Kyrie's is going to be more impressive just because, you know, we haven't seen him as much, obviously, this mm-hmm. season and in past seasons, but games like that, not even games like this, games where he just scores 35 are easy reminders of like the fact that you probably can't find 10 players in the history of the sport that are better at scoring the basketball than Kyrie Irving. So that's why Brooklyn's always this interesting team. You know, they've been playing a little bit better lately in the games they've had Durant and Kyrie, whatever happens to Simmons. But yeah, for me, it's Kyrie. Just obviously when he was with Cleveland, loved him, but still, like, when he's on the floor, the Brooklyn Nets have arguably the two best scorers in basketball and two of the 10 best in the history of basketball. So
yep.
I'll go Kyrie, but yeah, Towns was awesome too. The way he's, you know, he said it. He said he's the best 3-point, you know, center of all time, whether you agree with that or not, whatever, but he's played kind of like it this season.
He went 7 of 11 from three.
Right.
I think I do, you know, I do lean the same way as you. I think in addition to just the lack of frequency as we see Kyrie Irving do stuff like this because of the fact that he's not playing every game, kind of builds into it. But it's also the fact that Kyrie Irving is like 6'1 on a good day. And when you're going out and getting 60 points, like, yes, Cat had 7 threes, 15 free throws, but you have to think a lot of the shots that someone like Kyrie is taking will come further away from the basket. They're more difficult. There's a much bigger chance that he has a mismatch against working against him. Just because of his size, I think it's much more impressive when a guard goes out and scores 60 because they're just up against far more than a dominant big man who can also stretch the floor, is basically good at everything on the offensive end. Zach, do you differ at all, or do you think Cat was more impressive? And this isn't to discredit Cat whatsoever. These were both phenomenal performances.
Yeah, I think I'm just kind of opposite from both of you guys, which is like both.
Oh, you're
biased
because Towns is the reason the Spurs lost that game.
Yeah,
you're
that's
so
exactly
biased.
What it was. The Spurs managed to, you got a huge offensive showing from them. You had a 34-point outing from Big Body, and you got the loss. That is like the biggest win of your season.
Yeah, it was perfect. I'm not saying that doesn't play a factor into what I'm about to say, but I think what did it for me personally was like the emotional side of it, because, and let me pull up the tweet. I should have had it before this, but
the Cat tweet. Yeah.
Like that was a big time narrative, I believe, revolving around when his parents, here it is. So after the game, he tweeted yesterday, or this was the morning after that game. Yesterday was 2 years to the date that my parents walked into the ER at JFK Medical in Edison, New Jersey, and were admitted with COVID, the same hospital where he was born, and tragically the same hospital where his mother's life began to slip away. 2 years later, he walked into the AT&T Center with the greatest guardian angel that I could ever ask for and dropped 60 against the winningest coach of all time. I say this to say, no matter what life throws at you, you can come out of it stronger. Tough times don't last. Tough people do. Miss you, Mama. This game and my life is for you.
Answer.
What's that?
Can I change my answer?
Well, so like that obviously doesn't have anything to do with the basketball performances, but I also think that if you would have asked me on Monday, or I guess Kyrie scored 60 on Monday, so ask me on Sunday, who could score 60 points? Who would you think would score 60 points more often or have a better chance to do so? I would have said Kyrie. I don't think I ever would have thought Cat would have scored 60 points. Again, because it requires such accuracy from three and getting to the free throw line 16 times, which is something that I don't think he does a ton. I can fact check myself here in a minute, but I was more taken aback by Towns having 60 points than Kyrie, because Kyrie is already an elite scorer. I think there's a great argument to be made that regardless of what you think about him off the court, his flat earth, his anti-vax, all that stuff, there is a good argument to put him into that top 75 list. And I think a lot of people already have him as maybe the biggest snub, certainly one of the top three, top five there. So I think he already, like, the pedigree kind of precedes Kyrie in my mind as a guy who is likely a future Hall of Famer, has a championship, hit one of the biggest shots in NBA Finals history, and has a lot of, I would think, again, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think Kyrie probably has more impressive scoring outputs in single games than Towns does.
Yeah.
And I've also been very impressed with Towns, his leadership on this team to turn them around from, I believe, an 11-15 start. Mm-hmm. To 40-30 now, and the best record in the league since the All-Star break. So it gave Towns the nudge. All of that gave Towns the nudge for me. But again, both like back-to-back 60-point games in terms of, I think, Monday and Tuesday, right? Or Sunday and Monday, whenever it was. Just having two guys score 60 on back-to-back nights is awesome.
Yeah, I agree. The offensive outbursts in the NBA have been unbelievable. You know, Steph finally kind of broke out of his slump, kind of his extensive slump a few nights ago. But then last night we saw Steph go down. It looked like Marcus Smart hustled for a loose ball, dove on the ground, and I think rolled over onto Steph's ankle, his calf.
Yeah, I think it was just his leg, but he got like rolled up on by the sideline.
Yeah, and then Shams tweeted today that Steph is going to be out indefinitely, coming at arguably the worst time of the season, seeing that the play-in tournament is less than a month away. Not that Golden State's going to be in the play-in tournament, but they just got Draymond Green back. Second game back was yesterday. Now Steph, who is the most important player to that team, obviously Draymond up there, you lose him as soon as you get Draymond back. So I haven't seen anything about a timetable for Steph, but like,
I think I saw they expect him to be back for the first round.
Okay, good. So do you
like
think
there was no, I think there was no structural damage or anything like that. So,
okay.
Like, it's obviously unfortunate that they're going to miss him probably the rest of the regular season, but it sounds like the grand scheme of things was like crisis averted essentially.
Yeah. Do you think missing him for the rest of the regular season does anything to their stock? They're sitting third in the West, one game behind Memphis, 3.5 games up on Utah, 3 games up in the loss column on Utah. I don't right now, hypothetically, if they remain stagnant in the 3 seed, they'll play Denver first round, which that alone is terrifying.
But depends if Jamal Murray is there, but yeah.
Yeah, yes, correct. It depends if Jamal Murray at the very least, additionally Michael Porter Jr. are there, because I think as of now, Denver at plus 1400 to win the West is a very interesting bet if you believe they're coming back.
Sure.
Do you think this does anything for them strategically where they may rest a couple guys, kind of slip down to the 4 and play Dallas at the 5? Like, do you think that's all smoke and mirrors?
No, I think what it does is it puts Memphis, you know, firmly in the driver's seat to get the 2 seed. I think I saw they have 12 games left, 7 of which are at home. Like Zach mentioned, Dylan Brooks has been back, who's their best perimeter defender, on top of having Jaren Jackson Jr., who probably won't win the award, but should be in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. Like, we know how deep this team is, and, you know, as long as Ja's there, they should wrap up that second seed. I think it's possible that Utah could get up. Utah's been playing a lot better lately that nobody's really talking about. But, like, what it does is it changes. Like, I always talk about how Draymond, like, I just love what Draymond does for this team. He's so important. But the way this offense flows and moves without Curry, like, just what Curry, the attention he brings to defenses, obviously with his ability to score, but how he moves off the ball, it just makes everything kind of move defensively to where you're all of a sudden in kind of scramble mode. And they can still do that with Klay Thompson. But, you know, Klay had the huge game against Milwaukee, but like, he's been pretty inconsistent since then. He's been trying to, you know, and he's not going to stop shooting. Like, but once he gets that, he's been taking some like kind of weird, like off 1 foot, like runners. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of been weird. He's been trying to get back, you know, in the swing of things. But as good as Klay is, you don't have that same effect when you have just Klay. Jordan Poole is probably one of the most underrated players in basketball. He's obviously going to step in and play a huge role. I think I'd be pretty surprised if they, you know, got the second seed over Memphis. But as long as Curry's back for the first round of the playoffs, like, we know this team can win the finals. It's, you know, especially with Draymond back, and we should probably talk about it, but James Wiseman, look out. Like, they get anything from James Wiseman. Yeah,
he just got recalled.
Yeah, Zach, didn't you point out his G League stats earlier?
Yeah, 20-10 with, I think, 1.7 blocks a game in 3 starts. And the key to me there, like 20-10 with a couple blocks per game for James Wiseman in the G League is right. Like, okay, expected. That's what he should be doing.
Yeah.
21 minutes a game.
Yeah.
21 minutes a game, 20-10.
So he's Boban.
2 blocks. I mean, this is like.
Or is he Chris Boucher? That's the question.
Oh, God. I think it's promising.
I agree.
Maybe not for this playoffs. Like, I don't know how much you can actually play him, but just for the future. Like, because we have not had any updates on Wiseman really all season. So it's just good to see that he seems to be you know, for lack of a better term, right as rain here, like 20 and 10 in 21 minutes. I don't care who you're playing. That's pretty darn good.
Joe, you and I were super high in Wiseman going to Golden State during the draft process.
Yep.
But man, imagine if they did have LaMelo. It's fun to think about if they had LaMelo right now.
I know it is, but the thing is, I agree. I think that would come at the expense of someone like a Jordan Poole, though.
Right. And Jordan Poole has been, I mean, we can talk about it. Like Jordan Poole, we've seen him produce a lot. I think his usage rate is over 30% with Curry off the floor. But if you add Clay on the floor, because obviously he's played a lot without Clay, it goes down, but it's like 25%. He can create shots. There's a reason they love Jordan Poole. And he's going to play a huge role for them. Like, would I be shocked if they got the second seed behind Draymond and Poole and Clay and everybody? No, but I still think that, you know, with a game, what is it? A game up Memphis is right now. 7-12 at home to end the season. I think Memphis, and to be fair, like I said pre any injuries, right? If both these teams are 100%, I actually had Memphis in a 7-game series over Golden State. So without Curry, I think they match up really well. We can talk about that another time. I think they match up extremely well, but at the end of the day, they won't face each other for a little bit. So
I think you've got to be worried if you're Golden State about slipping down past the Jazz or the Mavericks. And I think the Jazz are a bigger threat here. Again, because like with Steph out, I know Gary Payton is going to come back and Poole can handle the ball some. And obviously Draymond can play some point forward, point center. I just like the Jazz have been playing pretty well. And like I know Bojan is banged up, et cetera, and Rudy Gobert's been having the calf issues. But like if you look at the schedules, like all three of those teams are ending the season with really easy schedules. Lakers, Spurs, Pelicans for the Warriors, Thunder, Suns, probably resting on the second to last day of the season. You know, I think the one seed is pretty much sewn up for them. Then Portland for the Jazz, and then Pistons, Blazers, Spurs for the Mavericks. So I do think that given the nature of the Warriors schedule, they have some tough games at Miami, at Memphis, home Phoenix when they probably won't be resting quite yet. April 2nd in San Francisco against Utah, so at home, some of the important games left on the schedule. But I think there's enough gimmies in there. They play the Spurs twice, the Magic, the Wizards, the Kings. Again, I said the Pelicans and the Lakers, who that should be a rollover game.
They're already up by 25. That's the rule. If you play that team, you're up by 25 at some point.
I guess all that to say this, two things. One, Golden State, in my opinion, has to finish top three. You do not want to see Phoenix in the second round.
No.
Oh, dear God.
Nobody does, but like they it's 100% worth fighting for,
especially in the second round, because Chris Paul is probably going to be back for the first round by the time the second round, barring any setbacks, he'll be 100%. And then it's just with the way Cam Johnson's played and campaign, because remember campaign,
Torrey Craig last night, like
right,
what?
And like campaign has missed most of the season, then he came back right around when Chris Paul left, and he's played
really
unbelievable
well.
So it's like all of a sudden now you have campaign coming off your bench, and if they go with their traditional starting five, you have campaign and Cam Johnson coming off your bench. Like Phoenix in the second round, like that's nightmare scenario.
And the last thing I was going to say just about this was kind of to circle back to where you guys started is, I think Steph Curry could come back and play in the regular season if they absolutely needed him to. But I think they're just going to go ahead and take their chances with the team they have, the guys they have. I think they should be able to hold on to this three seed. And it's not
still have an all-star starter. So
it's not the end of the world if you drop to four. Like, having a healthy Steph Curry, and obviously we know his history with I think both ankles, right? Having a healthy Steph Curry for the games that count, you know, starting mid-April, is much more important than getting that three seed over the four. But if you can do both, that's the clear and obvious goal, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely shakes things up in the West quite a bit, which, you know, we've been talking a lot about how I think the Eastern Conference playoffs will be not more competitive, that's the wrong word, more of a toss-up, more potential outcomes. But I think the West is going to be much more interesting than we Then we thought some NFL news. Allen Robinson signing a 3-year deal with the Rams.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I was about to say that it's killing me, all this NFL news breaking while we're recording this. Baker Mayfield also requested a trade.
Good for him. Good for him.
By the way, great timing for me to have written an article at FTN Fantasy about teammates that can both be wide receiver ones, and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods were in that article. So great. I guess.
So Odell's gone now.
Yeah,
right?
You can't re-sign Odell coming off an
ACL. Also hurt, but yeah.
Yeah, but you have Van Jefferson, Robinson, Kupp, and Woods now. Anyway, correct. That's it's so crazy. The Rams just come up out of nowhere, like, for all these players. Like, remember they came out of nowhere for Odell. It was like, and then for Robinson, it was, oh, is he going to go to the Raiders, the Eagles, any of these receiver needy teams? It's like, no, just go to the Rams, have him win another Super Bowl potentially. Jesus.
Yeah, that's annoying. Well, back to NBA. So, you know, we talked about Steph Curry and the Warriors for a while. That kind of leads me into our topic about, like, who the best player in the NBA is. I'm not saying it's Steph Curry. But when people throw that question around, you never have a unanimous answer. Like we were at the point 10 years ago. You asked that, it was LeBron James. Everyone said LeBron James. He had a monopoly on the league, MVP year in and year out, and the only thing working against him at that point was voter fatigue. But now, you know, Adam, I think you mentioned it on a different podcast perfectly. Oh wow, Zach. Sorry, I saw your message. Browns are not going to trade Baker Mayfield. What the hell?
They literally said we're not accommodating your request.
Sounds like the Browns to me.
Yeah, but anyways, like Adam, you said it. I think you put it eloquently. Like at any given day, you can make a case for 5+ players. Like when I think of who the best player in the NBA is, two guys come to mind. It's Giannis and Kevin Durant. Jokic being a I'd say those two are 1A and 1B. They flip-flop those two, Jokic being 2, and I think you go LeBron and Embiid. But I think the best way to potentially measure it, I guess there is no way to quantify it, but you can have a different answer for every angle. The best shooter in the NBA, Steph Curry, the most dominant player in the NBA, I think you can still argue LeBron James. You can argue Joel Embiid. Most skilled, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic. Best scorer, Kevin Durant. Best defender and all-around player, Giannis. Like, I'll flip it to you, Adam, because I know you've been really in tune with this conversation lately. Like, how do you even approach this debate? And, like, what is your take on it? Who is the best player in the NBA? To me, you guys know my answer, but so, everyone listening, probably all 21, and that's probably generous, people listening, know my answer.
It's interesting because, like, especially comparing, like, for instance, like Embiid and Jokic, right? In the past, I guess still it's like, okay, well, Embiid's more dominant. Embiid's a better defender. Jokic is a better facilitator. He's probably more skilled. They're both, you know, very, very good shooters for the center position. But like all of a sudden, Jokic isn't like a turnstile defensively anymore. He's not Joel Embiid.
No, he's not. No, not at all.
But if that gap closes in terms of like how, like, because Jokic used to be okay, he can't defend. I was looking at it the other day, like, his numbers at the rim are better, they're way lower. His field goal percentage out at the rim, his defensive numbers as the, you know, the role man and pick and roll defense, like, he's just been better. And we know the numbers, like, his MVP season, it's not even as good as it's this year. Like, he's ridiculous. But for me, like, I don't have an answer. Like Giannis. Yes, he's the best player in the league. Guess what? So is Jokic. So is Embiid. So is Kevin Durant. So, like, I just think it's a good thing for the league, too, that I don't know who the best player in the NBA is. Like you just asked me who the best player in the NBA is. I don't know. And I think that's really awesome. Like, I think that's great for the league because we've had, you know, LeBron as the best player in the league for, like, 12 years. And then it was, you know, Kevin Durant. And then, like, there was a stretch where it's like, okay, it's probably Giannis. And then it's like, okay, well, now it's Giannis, it's Embiid, it's Jokic, it's Durant, it's LeBron is still in, and even at 37, 38 years old, LeBron is still in the discussion. So I don't really have an answer. And like you said, I don't know how to quantify it. You have to break down everything individually. Like, what does this player do better than every other player? Like you said, Durant is the best scorer in the league. I don't think anybody would debate that really. But like, do you want a player to just be the best scorer in the league, or do you want Giannis, who can score 30 and change games defensively, and his facilitating has been better the last couple years? Like, I don't know. It's insane.
So let's, Zach, what is your take on this? Because after you give yours, I want to break it down and let's go like category by like archetype by archetype, scorer, defender, dominance. Like let's just see who we think is the best at each particular trait. But I want your take on like who you think the best player in the NBA is and how you both quantify and qualify that.
Yeah, so I think I'm really, I don't know if jaded is the right word, but like when I was trying to figure out who I thought the best player in the league was, my mind immediately went to Jokic. And I'm not going to argue with anybody who says Jokic is the best player in the league for a lot of the reasons that Adam just mentioned, like the on-off splits on both ends of the floor are absolutely ridiculous right now. Like, I think he's in the 99th percentile on the offensive end of the floor in terms of on-off splits and the 92nd percentile in terms of defensive splits. That's just, like, unheard of. And yeah, the fact that he, like, what's this team's record if he's not playing? Like, they're 14 games over.
They probably have 18 wins.
I was going to say, they're 14 games over 500 right now. I think they're 14 games under and maybe a few games worse, to your point, Adam.
Their best player is like Aaron Gordon at that point.
Yeah, Aaron Gordon, Will Barton, whatever. Like, even adding just Jamal Murray back in or just MPJ, like, I do think the drop-off is still almost just as steep. But in terms of the best player in the NBA, which, like, essentially, who is the best basketball player in the world? I'm still taking Giannis because he contributes in literally.
That smile.
That made my day. And I'm wearing a Spurs shirt just for you. That is like, that is just the synergy. You know, it just works out well.
So by the end of this episode, I need to choose my top player in the NBA. That's my goal. And it's probably going to take the next half hour.
So I actually, like, speaking of Giannis, I just added in the bet tracker, Giannis Defensive Player of the Year at plus 550. Yep. I think the Bucks defense has continued to improve. The addition of Brook Lopez helps, but that also helps the unit cohesively. But the big, like, a lot of measures like this, like the NBA will have those, whether it's a key MVP ladder, the defensive player of the year, power rankings, things like that. Those are usually pretty accurate. Giannis comes in. He's the latest defensive player of the year favorite, but he's behind both Bam Adebayo and Rudy Gobert, who's still minus 150. Felt like a very strong value. But anyways, go ahead with why Giannis is definitely the best player in the NBA.
Well, I guess I'll take that aside that you said about Defensive Player of the Year and rewind a month to the week before the All-Star break when we did our mid-season awards, or, you know, like two-thirds of the season awards. And I said I thought Giannis was the best value on the board because the Bucks were going to have a strong close to the season, and I thought he would shoot up the board. So not always a donkey over here. That's looking like a pretty good pick. But yeah, to that end, like, Giannis already has a Defensive Player of the Year award under his belt. He has NBA MVP awards. He has Finals MVP. He's got a ring and 30 points a game, 11 and a half boards, 6 assists, 4.5 assists per game for his career. Now he's 6-time All-Star, 2.5 stocks per game.
And he's 27.
Right around 3 turnovers, which is right in line with his career average. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't see an argument. Like, obviously, when you expand it to either a multi-year window or historic full career windows, then we can get into a bigger argument against some of these other guys. But, like, Giannis, to me, is at the top in terms of best player in the world right now. And I would have Jokic second, with Luka Doncic very close third. And I don't know if you guys had any sort of list. Of course I made a list. I've got Embiid fourth. I've got KD fifth. And then he's kind of in a tier. It's kind of KD, then LeBron, then Steph. But those are kind of like a three-way tie for fifth for me. Because I think all three of those guys are getting to the point of their careers where you have to open it up to the historical data or the career-long sample sizes to really put them over those other four guys who I think are all in various degrees of still rising in terms of their prime. maybe Giannis is at near the peak. Maybe he's slightly coming down on the other side of his prime, but I don't think so. And I think KD, LeBron, and Steph obviously will have their place in history in the, I don't know, whatever you would call it, the outside of the term Hall of Fame, the actual Hall of Fame, your pyramid, your ladder, your list, whatever. Those guys are all going to be there. And anybody who is a hoops head, your top 25, right, with those three guys at the very worst. But yeah, Giannis, Jokic, Luka, Embiid would be my top.
Let me ask this. We saw what Giannis did in game six, right? Yep, last year's finals went to six, right?
Yep.
We saw what he did in game six of the finals last year. 50 plus points, you know, the impact both ends of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, on a given night, we've seen it, you know, the last couple of days. But in that game, the size of that game in his first finals, what he did, scoring, you know, defensive ability, the blocks, the switching, like, yes, in a game six in the NBA finals, can Kevin Durant, can Luka Doncic go score 50? Probably. But I guess the way I look at it is, I don't know if a player in the league can do what Giannis did in that game six on both ends of the floor. I really don't.
I think,
that's where I'm starting to get towards Giannis, and I think I'm with Zach that Jokic is two for me. But I also, like Giannis, he had everything on that game. Like, he changed the entire, and I understand these elite players will change games, but I just don't think, as good as they are, Jokic, Luka, like, I don't think they can do what Giannis did in that game six personally.
I don't disagree. My top.
Oh yeah. You don't
three. I don't. And by design, I don't. My top three, it's Giannis, Jokic, Durant. Then Luka would be my fourth.
Embiid fifth then?
Embiid fifth, yeah. Okay. My big.
It might be more difficult to rank like two through five than it is one.
Yeah.
Because I'm in agreement. I think you guys convinced me. Plus, I thought about that finals performance. I do now have Giannis one followed by Jokic, but then it's like, okay, now you have to rank Kevin Durant and Joel Embiid and Luka Doncic. Like,
yeah, and like the
big thing with. Go ahead.
I was just going to say about Luka, I do think he has the ability to have the eye-popping, historic playoff games in conference finals and NBA final series going forward. He just has to get there, and I don't think we've seen a team like, obviously, to be one of the greats, one of the top 10, 15, 20, 25 players of all time, you have to be able to put a team, a lesser team, on your back and go further in the postseason than you're supposed to by the stats or by the pundit predictions, etc. But like, listen to these Luka stat lines here. These are all playoff games. 42, 7 and 9, 13, 10 and 10, 43, 17 and 13, 38, 9 and 9, 31, 10 and 11, 39, 7 and 7, 44, 9 and 9, 42, 8 and 14, 29, 8 and 11, 46, 7 and 14. Do you know how many playoff series? Do you remember how many playoff series Luka has played in?
Two, right?
He's played the
two.
Clippers, total. Right?
Total. Two.
Yeah, that's insane.
All those games in two playoff series.
That's insane.
This we've talked about them at length. I've picked him twice in a row on this podcast for the MVP. Neither time has that come true. It is coming. This guy just turned 23. I cannot wait to see the next, hopefully, 16 years of Luka Doncic in the playoffs. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to win an MVP. Like, I don't.
At multiple.
Yeah, I would be stunned if he didn't win an MVP.
He can control a game like almost nobody else I've ever seen. The only people I've seen control a basketball game like Luka Doncic does and do whatever he wants, especially obviously on the offensive end of the floor, they're all first ballot Hall of Famers in that ladder, that pyramid, that list that I have, like, historically. So, like, again, I've said it for years now, and that's definitely not changed. And the fact that we're approaching playoff Luka for only the third time ever, it's got me excited.
Yeah, that Clipper series last year was phenomenal on his part. I think going back to Giannis quick, my big selling point with Giannis is also the fact that every single critique that people have, you know, bestowed upon his game he's worked and refuted it in the finals. His free throw percentage.
That was my favorite. That was one of my favorite moments ever because I hated the counting. And when he was at the line, the Suns, I hated that so much.
The guy
I
thought it was so counting with the money.
Yeah, I thought it was so lame. And first of all, I think it helped Giannis. So good job. Second of all, I thought it was so lame. And to see, what did he finish at? Like 15
or 17?
He
shot 17 or 19.
That's right, 17 or 19. Yeah, like that's another thing. Like, it's obviously like Kevin Durant could go 17 or 19. You know, Embiid clearly can, like, we've seen Embiid. Like, but the fact that Giannis, in the biggest game of his life, after having some issues clearly with free throws, like, and shooting in general, has worked at it.
The best performance of his career.
That was, that will go down as one of the greatest performances in NBA history. Like,
I agree, 100%.
Without question.
I think it also shows, and like, you know, going into this year, it was people still don't respect Giannis's jumper, yada, yada. He's shooting almost 37% of catch and shoot threes this year. Obviously, the volume isn't 5-6 threes per game like these other guys are, but he's doing enough now where he doesn't have to come out and shoot 41% from three.
I mean, what game were you watching when it was like teams, like defenders were like not just respecting it, but they were like running out to close out? And once you do that, it's absolutely over because he's going right by you.
Correct. Because the thing is, once you do that, you give up a free lane to probably the best driver in basketball. Like you are trying to stop a Mack truck at 75 miles per hour coming straight at you. I think both of those aspects, the 3-point shooting critiques and the free throw critiques, also serve as a gentle reminder that Giannis is still a very raw player for as good as he is. Like, he is not nearly as polished as these other guys. He's never gone up through an AAU system. You saw the players he was playing against in Greece. They were 3 years younger than him, half the size. And he's still running around, getting a hold of his extremities. He's very, you know, uncoordinated. He was like Thon Maker when Thon Maker was a rookie and just obviously didn't pan out. But to my point, like, Giannis has just turned 27. It's scary to think that he's still getting better. And I don't think we've seen his ceiling yet. And that's the terrifying part. Like, if this is his ceiling and he does this for three more years, the Bucks are in phenomenal shape to contend year after year because he's the best player in the NBA. If he continues to get better, it's already been a wrap for this league with a player like Giannis, but like, teams won't be able to defend him like in any way.
He's starting to get this turnaround going now, and that's jumper in the post.
Kobe or DeMar DeRozan-esque baseline fadeaway. And then at the end, like, I think one of my favorite aspects about him
is he plays for the Bucks.
Well, yeah, correct. But the complete lack of ego, like, he doesn't care about getting dunked on because he wants to contest and block a shot. He misses a free throw at one end. They get a rebound and go in transition. He'll chase them down and block them. Like, he is all gas 100% of the time. And you don't see a lot of superstars like that anymore. Like, and again, this is zero discredit to the other superstars in the league. Luka is one of the whiniest players when it comes to officiating in the NBA. I love KD's chirping. I absolutely love it. But he's chirping at fans left and right, telling them quite literally, sit down and shut the fuck up and watch the game. Like, you will never see Giannis doing that. He's just playing the game the best that he knows how. So Giannis is my best player in basketball.
I'm assuming you saw Giannis yesterday on Austin 316 day.
Yes, he doesn't drink.
He doesn't.
He drank the beer.
He's like, I'll have a sip. That's nasty.
Coors Light is pretty damn nasty.
Yeah, let me ask this, because we didn't talk about Joel Embiid, who I think clearly belongs in this discussion.
100%.
Like, if he doesn't win MVP, he'll be second. I think we can agree. Just Giannis is clearly in discussion, but I think the fact that Giannis has won two, they'll probably give it to Embiid, or just give it to Jokic again, who clearly deserves it. But, like, we've talked about the improvements he's made. Pull up threes, like, it's not like he's just getting, you know, it's not like Tyrese Maxey is driving and getting double teamed and Embiid happens to be open on the top of the key for a three. He's dribbling the ball after a defensive rebound, pulling up from three and shooting like 38%. It's stupid. The touch he has for a 7-1 center is insane. We know he's the most dominant player in the post in basketball. We know he's, maybe after Giannis, the best defensive player in basketball. Like, he clearly belongs in this discussion. And then, so, like, what do you guys think about Embiid? And then I think a fun question can be, 2 or 3 years, if Giannis, you know, I don't think it'll happen in 2 or 3 years, obviously, but if there were in a couple of years, one or two players to make the leap from, you know, really good to elite to, oh, they might be the best player in basketball. Does anybody, like, Ja probably stands out. Maybe Jason Tatum.
In 2 or 3 years, if it's not Giannis, it's going to be Luka. That's literally
well, my, like, yeah, like 2-3 years is like a ridiculously small time frame, because Luka and Giannis are and Jokic and Embiid, they're still going to be dominating the league. But like, who could be next up, I guess, is the best question. Whenever
I think Ja's in that conversation. I think you can throw Jason Tatum in that conversation. He just turned 24.
I thought Jason he was still Tatum, 21. Those jokes are great. Jason Tatum's only 21.
It's the same jokes as like when Perry Ellis was still at Kansas, and it seems like he had been at Kansas for 20 years at some point.
His look regarding didn't Embiid, help that joke.
What'd you say?
I said his look didn't help that joke.
Yeah, the receding hairline, the loss of hair, the Greg Oden syndrome, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. But I think regarding my hang-up with Embiid, I think Embiid would be second at best in my MVP votes right now behind Jokic. I think Giannis has a case aside from voter fatigue. But you compare, like, a lot of Embiid's games are very inefficient, like just like a 9 of 28 game from the field. It's kind of unheard of for a big man.
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, and I could be wrong. I don't think Embiid has ever gone 9 of 28 from the field. Yeah, I could like be absolute. Was it actually?
I'll find it. Yeah, I'm going to look up his game log right now.
I'm sure you're right, but that just seems like.
I only remember that because I looked at it. I was like, how the hell does this guy go 9 of 28 from the field?
3 games ago.
Was it the Brooklyn game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or no, yeah. Orlando. Orlando, yeah. Excuse me.
He went 9 of 28 that Orlando game?
He was 9
went to overtime.
I know it did, Orlando. But I didn't realize he even. Wow. All right. I apologize. I did not know he shot that poorly. Yeah.
And well, the thing is, he shot worse the game before against Brooklyn. He went 5 of 17. He then against Miami
4 of 15. Yeah.
Like a lot of these games, like 8 of 25 against the Thunder. Like, come on. Like 11 of 27 against the Wizards. I know a lot of it, he'll settle for threes and stuff like that. But my big hang up, and it's not to discredit how good and how dominant Embiid is. But if you're that dominant, you shouldn't be shooting 30%, especially when you are 60% of the time at the rim. He baits for fouls a lot. We know this. He hasn't shot less than – he shot less than 10 free throws once in his last 10-plus games. He had the 27 free throw game against the Knicks. Like, you can take – I'm not one that caters to the argument, well, if you take free throws out of his game, like, it's part of his game. You can't take threes away from Steph Curry. It's part of his game. But the inefficiencies like that are a bit, it causes me a bit of trepidation when it comes to best player in the world putting him next to like Giannis and Durant and Jokic.
If we're just talking single game field goal percentage, comparing him to Giannis this season, that we listed 3 in the last, what, 7 games that he shot sub 35%, Embiid, that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sub 40% in a game for Giannis. Just once since January 15th, just twice since December 10th, just to illustrate how well Giannis shoots consistently.
Yep. And Jokic is similar vein. Jokic, I would imagine, is a bit lower volume than Embiid, potentially lower than Giannis. Giannis also plays the least amount of minutes of these three.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great point.
He also has the best team around him out of the three.
No, I agree. 100% agree. I will not refute that. Trust me. Yeah. I won't. But this team,
I guess for me, whenever I watch Embiid, he just doesn't miss. So it like gets ingrained in my head that he just doesn't have these. Like, but yeah, you clearly rattled it off. Yeah, I mean, he's clearly in the discussion for top five, though. I don't think anybody can deny that. And then yeah, like for next up, I mean, Ja Morant, Jason Tatum, they probably stand out as 1 and 2 for me. Like, I talked about Tatum. Like, he had that stretch earlier in the season where he was shooting. Like, he takes a lot of tough shots because he's, you know, an ISO player who just can score 35 any night. So he and Jaylen Brown, that was a big part of why I was worried about Boston earlier in the year, because they were taking a ton of tough shots. But now they're moving the ball more and their defense is amazing. But, like, Tatum off ball is, like, one of the most underrated defenders in basketball, too, which I love. Yeah. And then we've seen Ja, like, if Ja Morant doesn't wind up on a highlight reel on a given slate, he probably didn't play that game. That's just that's just where it's come down to with Ja Morant. He's ridiculous.
And Jason Tatum is a player that proved both you and I, you know, back at RotoCurve were pretty bearish on Jason
Tatum. To be
Tatum.
Fair, it wasn't that we didn't think he was a bad player. We just thought he was overrated for fantasy. That's what it came down to.
Fair, very fair. Which he was at the time. I think he was.
Yeah, he had a lot of floor games, which is why we didn't like him. And is anybody, are we missing anybody that could be next? Like,
good job. You know,
I meant, no, I said next.
This is one podcast I thought we'd be able to skate by without Spurs chatter.
No, well, Zach misheard me. I didn't say next. Like, I said next, not already, like, there.
Yeah, already to go. Yeah.
So what about, like, the thing is, like, obviously you can't say Zion. If he was healthy this year, he'd probably be in that conversation because he was downright dominant.
Yeah, when we last saw him, you want to talk about field goal percentage.
Yeah, he had a stretch last year where it was, like, 70% plus for, like, 12 straight games. Didn't he lead the league last year in shots, field goal attempts and makes in the paint last year?
He had to have, yeah.
Which is just insane. I don't know who else I would put up there. I'm not going to, like, I don't think Trae Young has that ceiling. Strictly because of his defensive ineptitudes. And, like, obviously Atlanta hides Trae Young defensively, and he will improve just like every NBA player does. But I don't think a player of his size and stature will ever be able to be an above average.
And this is a great rookie class, as we've seen. None of the rookies have that type of ceiling, in my opinion.
Wow. Like, that's a very humble comment from you, Adam.
Listen, Mobley's amazing, but, like, offensively, he has a long way to go. He's been good since Jared Allen's been out playing full time center, but he has a long way to go scoring, which, again, he's what, 21? So, like, but yeah, so I don't know if anybody else has that type of ceiling of, well, again, we're talking about the five players we talked about, right? It's what? Giannis, Jokic, Luka, Embiid, Durant. They're probably going to be down as five of the 25 greatest players ever. Mm-hmm. Giannis already is, in my opinion. Durant already is, in my opinion. So, barring any sort of crazy.
I mean, it's really hard to not say Jokic isn't going to be at this rate. Like,
no, Jokic is a lock. I see like tweets like, who's the best player in Denver history? Like, really? Like, seriously?
What else do they say? Like, Melo? I mean, there's no discredit to Melo. Like, Melo's.
It's not even close.
But it's not close. It's literally not close. Yeah. So let's break it up a little bit then. I think we can all agree. Would you guys say the best shooter in the NBA is Steph Curry?
Mm-hmm.
PJ Tucker first, then.
Bobby Portis.
The funny thing is, statistically, I'm actually correct.
I know.
He's still leading the league.
I think so.
I believe he is. Bobby Portis.
Was it 45% or something?
It was 46% a couple weeks ago. Curry, best shooter. Who would you say is the best offensive player in the NBA? I think it's Kevin Durant.
Depends. Like, offensive player is Jokic.
Yeah.
Scorer.
Score. My apologies.
Right.
Score.
I would probably still say Durant. Durant has this. It's not even a move.
You
can argue
Kyrie's up there too.
Absolutely.
Like, you really like
Durant's had this move. And again, it's not even a move. He's had it his entire career because he's like 7 foot. Mm-hmm. He gets in the post. He faces up and he looks down at the ground. It's the most. It's literally like the most unstoppable move that nobody talks about when you compare it to like the Dirk fade and everything. He literally stares at the ground and just pulls up because you can't contest his shot if you don't know he's shooting. On top of that, he already has, you know, inches on everybody with his height. So it's like Durant's to me is still the best scorer in basketball.
Yeah, I Durant is my answer. I think best offensive player Jokic is my answer. It's a good distinction. Best defender. Mine's Giannis.
Yeah, I mean, he's just
Giannis
the most
followed by Draymond.
Versatile.
Yeah,
he can defend 1 through 5.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
there's plenty of players who can do that. He's just the most imposing,
right? And there's also like, I feel like there's always like, yeah, we feel comfortable with this player defending 1 through 5. Giannis, like, it's at 0 point is it a mismatch for the offense? Like, it's like, oh shit, Giannis is on us.
Yeah, exactly. We're probably not scoring. You took the words right out of my mouth. Mine maybe were a couple more F bombs in there from the coach perspective in me. If I saw any of my players being guarded by Giannis, I would never have a good reaction to it.
Remember the LeBron meme when he's at the free throw line and Kawhi checks back in?
I used that clip to justify so many Kawhi arguments.
I miss talking about Kawhi.
But the thing is, that's a justify, like, that absolutely clip alone. Like, you have arguably the GOAT, who I think is the GOAT, having him look back and say, fuck, like, this guy.
And that wasn't even Kawhi at that point.
because that was the year they lost. Correct.
That was Kawhi Leonard. That was Kawhi Leonard. That wasn't Kawhi.
That was what, third year? Exactly. I think it was third year Kawhi, I think, right?
I think it was third year Kawhi.
I think it was his third year in the league.
But he hadn't made the leap offensively yet to where he was the year after that. And then, of course, like he still, even the year after that when he won the finals MVP, wasn't. I appreciate you guys bringing up Kawhi so I can get excited about it.
But in all seriousness, like, I was going to ask, if right now Kawhi has had no injuries the past 5 years, he's clean bill health, is he with Giannis still defensive player, best defensive player?
Yes. Yes.
100%.
He may be the if clean bill of health for Kawhi Leonard in his career,
the player we haven't talked about,
he may be the best player.
I thought
there was a good 18 month stretch after the Spurs won their last title until he quit on the team. I thought he was the second best player in the league. That was still kind of, you know, because Steph. The Warriors won their first title of the year after that. So once they won, that's when I thought Steph ascended. I was saying at the end of that Spurs Heat Finals in 14 that he was the second best player in the league. You know, fellas, I'm sometimes just a little bit ahead of the field.
It was trending that way though. It really was.
He was unstoppable.
Yeah.
I mean, both ends of the court unstoppable.
Yes.
I miss watching Kawhi play basketball.
I miss watching him operate in the mid-range.
We only got to wait like 3 more weeks, fellas.
I know.
I'm a believer.
And you were very bearish at this time last season. So if we're trusting, like you said, you're ahead of the curve. I think. I guess we have to take your word like gospel when it comes to Kawhi.
But I still maintain, Joe, if he and Paul George come back, they're winning the West.
They might win the whole thing.
So we had defender, playmaker. It's either Luka or Jokic for me. It's probably Jokic, right?
Yeah, I would agree. It's if you want to give it to Luka, since we already gave best offensive player to Jokic, that's fine.
Yeah, and I think you could really get. I think we could spend a lot of time getting into the different types of shots and opportunities created by Jokic and Luka, given their different styles of play, how much more Luka has the ball in his hand overall, at least maybe I'm talking out of my ass there, but just from the eye test, I think he
yeah, handles because it like a we, lot more. I mentioned like touches per game a lot, but a touch can simply mean Jokic has it for half a second and then gets rid of it. We obviously know time possession, isolation stuff. Luka has the ball in his hands for more of the shot clock than Jokic does.
Without making that a huge topic and diving into it beforehand on the pod, I would lean towards Luka, and maybe that's just the fanboy in me and how much I love him. I love Jokic too, but I think playmaker, like, I just think Luka can – I think Jokic takes what the defense gives him, which is exactly what you should do. Mm-hmm. I think Luka creates more slightly than Jokic does. Like, he can – make what he wants to happen on the offensive end of the floor, where Jokic is just going to make the best play, which is typically always going to get his team a wide open shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I and the passes, the way he sees the floor.
Yeah.
I don't have ever seen anything like it. And then the last one, the most dominant player. I think this is the one of the conversations we've had that Embiid has a very, very strong case for.
I could say Giannis still.
But I think
I would still say Giannis.
I think the three players in this discussion, Giannis is mine. I think it's then Embiid, and this is a conversation I would put LeBron in.
See, I don't and I wanted to talk about LeBron in kind of a different setting before we ended the pod. I don't think Embiid affects the game, and I know that if any of the Philly contingent in the FTN community is going to be listening to this, they'll come at my head. So I guess we'll find out if they listen or not when they tag me or not. I think Luka changes the game more and controls the game more than Embiid not only does, but can. I don't think he has the same control over a 48-minute basketball game, all 10 guys on the floor, that Luka does. Like, he just...
Interesting.
I think it's just going to play out over Luka's career. I think it's hard to reach because, again, only 2 series in the playoffs to draw from. I think that category
portends more to playoff performances and not just commanding a game but or a possession, but a full series and making adjustments and picking another team apart, et cetera. Like, I think Luka already is better than Embiid in that regard. And I think we're going to see that hopefully for more than one series this year.
What has helped Embiid, though, we know how dominant he is on post-ups and getting to the free throw line and everything. When he, his first couple of years getting, you know, becoming like an elite center, he still had massive issues passing out of double teams and teams doubled him all the time. He's been way better in that this season.
Which see it is, as an assist numbers, right? Like, right. It's career high by
and,
a wide margin.
Yeah, and that's helped him become more dominant because you obviously are, especially before Harden got there, you are going to double him. We see it every time. He gets the post and then they play like a two-man game between doubling him and then, you know, going back to, you know, singling him. But he's made some no-look passes to a cutting Matisse Thybulle, to a Danny Green in the corner. Like, he's obviously not Jokic or anything like that, but that's helped him become more dominant because all of a sudden you have to say, should we double team him now? Because I remember when he first came in the league, he was getting double teamed, throwing passes into the stands. And now he's been elite, not elite, but like, you know, light years better.
Yeah, I think elite is a proper term for it. It's just we're talking about the elite tier now, so like trying to parse that out is tougher than just saying Embiid is elite. Which I would
let me close this out with one last question. Say Boban averages 35 minutes a game. Where does he rank?
The most efficient player of all time.
The greatest player of all time.
God, I love Boban.
So, I know, so do I. Speaking of Kawhi, latest update from Chris Haynes of Yahoo. Participating in rigorous pregame workouts, full contact, does not look like he has any limitations. But the hang-up, Ty Lue told Chris Haynes that if they can't get them back for the regular season, then they would not feel comfortable using them back into the playoffs.
Okay, Ty. Yeah, that's bullshit.
That's bullshit. That's complete bullshit.
That's horseshit.
Like, you're telling me right now, if you have the opportunity to ease Kawhi and Paul George in the first round of playoffs, you're not going to do that, knowing if they come back, you have a legitimate shot at winning a championship. You're doing.
You're not going to waste a year of those guys, and especially it's not even a year. They get to play for 2 months. It's perfect.
Right.
Like, and let me add two things before we go, and then I'll shut up. There's going to be one Spurs thing in here, so you can mute the pod for 30 seconds if you want to. If you can get action anywhere on LeBron winning the scoring title, I would assume those odds are probably pretty low, but he's 0.4 off Embiid, 0.3 behind Giannis for the scoring title. Durant is 0.3 behind LeBron, not going to qualify, I don't think. I don't think he's played enough games. Probably will by the end of the season, but that's all LeBron has at this point. It's two-faced. You can win the, or multifaceted is a better term. You can win the scoring title, another thing that goes onto his resume, and getting as close as possible, piling up as many points as possible to chase the overall scoring record of all time, which he's still a few thousand back. But, you know, I think that's something that I think he clearly wants to accomplish before he ends his career. So I think betting the overs on LeBron point props, as long as they don't get too out of hand in the last 3 weeks here, is something that I would be looking to do, you know, if I was in a legal gambling state. And then, you know, I promise the little bit of sparkle jerking here.
Oh, God.
Gold medalist Keldon Johnson last 6 games. All I'm saying, 24 points, 8 boards, 3 assists. Shooting 51-38. We won't talk about his 72% from the free throw line, but he's looking pretty good with the extended time, you know, getting DeMar out of there, getting Derek White out of there, LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, he's coming into his own. Get that top 3 pick, DeJounte, Keldon, and X. We're rebuilding,
you know,
quick,
crazy.
Fellas.
As cool as it is to say gold medalist Keldon Johnson, gold medalists and NBA champions Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton sounds a lot better.
are we really going to measure like favorite team players?
No,
yeah. How about this one?
No.
2022 NBA All-Star Darius Garland. That's it for right now. He'll get more though.
And then it'll be 2022 Rookie of the Year runner-up Evan Mobley.
I will be
Austinite NBA All-Star Austinite Jared Allen.
Yeah.
Okay, fair. Now we're really getting into the weeds.
We got to go.
We got to go. But before we do, LeBron James plus 210 right now to end the season as the highest points per game average.
Oh, dude, jump on that.
plus 210, Embiid plus 160, Giannis plus 175. Only two ahead of him.
Like, you think that LeBron James doesn't know exactly how many points he needs to score to get this done. You're out of your mind.
Yeah.
He's absolutely going for it.
The next closest is Luka at 16-1, which would not be worth it. No. So that'll do it for us. We will release this afternoon of Thursday, March 17th. We'll recirculate it Friday, March 18th. Zach and I will be back in a mere 2 hours here to talk for a half hour about the showdown slate. Catch us on YouTube at FTN Network. Subscribe. If you haven't subscribed to FTN Daily, promo code FTNTV gets you 15% off of any package that you want. Do us a favor and subscribe to the NBA package. But MLB did just launch as well with the early bird price. Set to go up after the next couple of users, so get in before it is too late now that we have a baseball season on hand. Zach, Adam, always a pleasure. And Zach, we'll be talking real soon.
Yes, sir.
For Adam, for Joe, for Zach, this is the FTN NBA Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24, at JMeds34, and at KweisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.